The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tastytrade. Tastytrade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low-capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tastytrade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
I'm Frank Holland, and you're listening to CNBC's Worldwide Exchange. Our show is live weekdays at 5 a.m. Eastern. Listen in. It is 5 a.m. here at CNBC Global Headquarters. I'm Frank Holland, and here is your 5 at 5. We start with Wall Street's whipsaw week, continuing with stock futures facing some fresh pressure after a modestly higher day yesterday. Why investors, they're feeling just a bit skittish ahead of the open. Too soon to cut. Fed Chairman Jay Powell set for day two of testimony on Capitol Hill. After telling lawmakers yesterday, the central bank, it just needs to see more data before making a call on when to cut rates. But rest assured, Powell says they are coming. A banking crisis and a $1 billion lifeline as former Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin swoops in a New York Community Bank with a massive cash infusion. Plus, Exxon making moves, putting Chevron's $53 billion deal for Hess in jeopardy. And Boeing firing back at regulators who say the company hasn't been cooperating with the investigation into the door plug blowout. It's Thursday, March the 7th, 2024. You are watching Worldwide Exchange right here on CNBC. Good morning. Welcome to Worldwide Exchange. Thank you so much for being with us. We're going to get you ready for this trading day ahead. We're going to kick off the hour with a check of U.S. stock futures. After a mostly higher day for stocks, that saw the major averages snap a three-session losing streak. Take a look right now. A bit of a mixed picture. We're seeing the S&P just kind of fighting for gains, just fractionally positive. Looks like the Dow would open up about 25 points lower. The Nasdaq firmly in the green right now in the pre-market. So this action in the pre-market after we heard from Fed Chairman Jay Powell saying he continues to expect interest rates to come down this year, but not quite ready to say when just yet.
It will depend on the path of the economy. Our focus is on maximum employment and price stability, and those and the incoming data as they affect the outlook, and those are the things we'll be looking at.
All right, we're checking treasuries as we get set for day two of Jay Powell on the Hill. Take a look. The benchmark right now trading at 4.1%, falling a few basis points from the levels that we saw yesterday. We'll continue to watch yields throughout the hour. We're also watching the energy market, specifically oil, with WTI hovering very close to 80 bucks a barrel. Tensions in the Middle East continue to rise after a Houthi missile attack yesterday that killed three aboard a cargo ship in the Gulf of Aden. These are some of the first casualties since the attacks in the Red Sea began back in November. Taking a look at the oil market, we're actually seeing oil move lower right now, down about 0.75% for both WTI, the U.S. benchmark, and Brent crude as well. All right, we also got to talk about metals, precious metals at that. We don't talk about them often, but when we do, you know, they're pretty close to highs or at highs. That's the story with gold this morning. You can see gold up more than 5% this week, right now trading at about $21.65 an ounce, up a third of a percent this morning. Again, gold very close to an all-time high, hitting a high yesterday. Okay, that is your morning money setup. Now, we have a news alert for you. New details this morning ahead of President Biden's State of the Union address tonight. In a call with reporters last night, the White House revealing the president will call for denying corporate tax breaks for all salaries over $1 million. Current law says companies cannot deduct CEO, CFO, and other executive salaries, so this would expand that rule to a new $1 million threshold. Biden also expected a call for raising the corporate minimum tax from 15% to 21%. The president will also likely put front and center the projections from his budget plan that was released on Monday. Those projections from the White House indicate that Biden's plan would cut the deficit by $3 trillion over the next 10 years. We'll have more on the State of the Union address coming up just a bit later in the show. All right, time now for a check on some of this morning's top corporate stories. Our Silvana Hanau is here with those. Silvana, good morning.
Hey, Frank, good Thursday morning to you. Well, just hours after federal regulators called out Boeing for failing to fully cooperate in their investigation into that January door plug blowout, Boeing is now responding, providing the NTSB with the names of employees on its 737 MAX door team. Now, before Boeing's reply, National Transportation Safety Board Chair Jennifer Homendy, in a Senate testimony yesterday, characterized the company's cooperation thus far in its probe, quote, beyond disappointing. Now, ExxonMobil is putting Chevron's $53 billion deal for Hess at risk, filing a contract arbitration claim yesterday, suggesting it may counter Chevron's offer for Hess's Guyanese oil properties, ones which Exxon currently operates. Chevron last week warned investors that Exxon and China's CNOOC say they have the right to counter its offer for Hess's stake in the Guyana project, one of the largest oil finds in years. And we're watching shares of New York Community Bank after a wild session yesterday. Right now, up about 4% in the pre-market. All this yesterday before closing nearly 8% higher. Now, this is all after the lender said it agreed to a deal with several investment firms, including former Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin's Liberty Strategic Capital, for a more than $1 billion cash infusion, Frank.
All right, Silvana, thank you very much. We'll see you just a bit later in the show. All right, turn our attention now back to the markets. Fed Chair Jay Powell back on Capitol Hill today for a second round of testimony on the economy and monetary policy, this time in front of the Senate Banking Committee. Powell telling House lawmakers yesterday he expects interest rates to start coming down this year, but isn't ready to say when, at least not just yet. The Fed Chair added the Fed's looking to see more consistency on inflation before it will decide to move.
It's a very important step. We think because of the strength in the economy and the strength in the labor market and the progress we've made, we can approach that step carefully and thoughtfully and with greater confidence. And when we reach that confidence, the expectation is we will do so sometime this year. We can then begin dialing back the restriction on our policy.
All right, with Powell largely sticking to the script, June is the first rate cut that seems to be in play. Traders are pricing in a 55% chance of a quarter point move at that meeting. Let's talk more about this and the broader markets with Jeremy Schwartz, Chief Global Investment Officer at WisdomTree. Also joining us, Sophie Lund-Yates, Senior Equity Analyst at Hargreaves Lansdown. Great to have you both here. Good morning. Jeremy, I'm going to start off with you. We saw the markets finish yesterday just slightly higher after Jay Powell's testimony. What does that indicate to you about traders' confidence in these cuts?
You know, what we were saying at the beginning of the year, the market was getting very excited, started pricing in 6 to 7 cuts at the end of last year. And some were saying if the Fed doesn't do these 6 to 7 cuts, we're going to have a really tough time getting gains in the market. We said it wasn't as much about how many cuts. It was the willingness to cut if there's weakness. You know, so we were worried they were going to say inflation's top concern. We can't cut rates even if there's an economy weakening. He showed the flexibility. But we do actually think inflation is much lower than reality. When you look at the housing data, real-time housing is down 1%, but BLS shelters at 6%. We get some updates on that. But we think he should be cutting. But I think the data is coming in a way that will eventually allow them to start cutting
right,
probably in June.
Yeah, Jeremy, you've come to us with some alternative data on inflation previous times you had us here, or you've been here with us. Sophie, I want to come over to you. Agree with Jeremy's take that this just gave the markets the confidence that the cuts are coming. And in your mind, is that enough to keep this rally this year going?
Sure. I mean, there's no doubt really that cuts are going to be coming through. But I personally think there remains quite a disconnect about when the market is expecting that to happen and when it will happen. I mean, when you look at the labor situation as well, as much as, again, things are broadly moving in the right direction, we're still in a situation where the labor market is incredibly hot. When you start looking at the way consumers are still behaving as well, particularly I'm just thinking about things like, you know, a barometer I might use might be looking at Amazon's strength in the retail space, for example. The willingness to spend on discretionary items is still very, very hot. So I do think that there's still quite a way to go, and that's why they're sticking to the script on not committing to a timeline yet on when those cuts are going to happen. And in terms of equity valuations, absolutely. I think that we're in this kind of, you know, I've said it before, I think that we're in this holding pattern, really, in terms of seeing any kind of meaningful gains until we get a clearer trajectory on that timeline.
You know, Sophie, it's interesting you say that. I mean, valuations, they haven't really seemed to put pressure on the market so far this year. And now with it seems like just more assurance from Jay Powell to the markets that these cuts are coming. We actually had Apollo's chief economist, Torsten Slack. He's been one of the voices saying there's a chance the cuts might not come. But you're still saying that valuation's an issue for this market?
I think in some corners, yes. I think we're probably over the worst of very severe jitters. But I do think that, yes, rather than looking at this through the lens of we're going to see the bottom fall out of prices. I'm talking more about monumental gains and further gains coming this year. I do think a lot of that is going to rest on the trajectory and when we start getting more meaningful sentiment coming out of the Fed. But that said, of course, we know that can change at very short notice. And, you know, I'm looking forward to April's earnings season with excitement and a little bit of trepidation.
Okay, a little bit of trepidation there. So, Jeremy, I'm going to come back over to you. You don't have any trepidation about looking overseas for opportunity. Right now, you like Japan. We've seen a big run-up in the Japanese markets. Bit of a different story there. Totally different central bank situation going on there. Why is right now the time to turn to Japan when we've finally gotten the confidence from Jay Powell that there's going to be cuts this year in the U.S.?
Well, coming back to what other guest just said, you know, the U.S. 21 times earnings, it's a 5% earnings yield. The Nikkei also break out to all-time highs, 40,000. You know, when we look at DXJ, it's our flagship equity product. It's got a 14 PE ratio, so 7 points lower than the S&P. It's been performing better than tech stocks in the U.S. It's got all these tailwinds behind it from the weak currency. Their central bank still at negative rates, getting off to maybe zero. So very much different situation. You've got Warren Buffett, one of the classic value investors, continuing to talk about why you should buy the stocks, not the currency, which is what DXJ does, gets you 5% on top of that. So it's really a combination of valuations and just a new sentiment breakout to this 40,000 Nikkei level.
You know, Jeremy, just for the audience's sake, you're talking your own book. The DXJ is one of a Wisdom Tree ETF. It's called the Japan Hedge Equity Fund. Sophie, I want to come back over to you. You're also looking overseas. We have an ECB decision coming up later today, and you're looking at Europe. You say the valuations there are pretty attractive.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, we can't forget that arguably the growth trajectory outline isn't necessarily the most exciting, but I do think that Europe is harboring some really quite attractive names that are kind of being forgotten. I think particularly at the moment, one thing that all of this noise has taught us is that there remains a lot of uncertainty around, and what do you do in those times? And that is going back to basics. You know, there are some companies and broader, really strong sectors with incredibly wide economic moats. So I'm thinking about names like the telecoms, for example. They've got incredible dividend paying ability. I'm thinking about defense, names like that. And I think particularly as well, if you hop over to the UK, as much as we do have some broad-based productivity challenges here, I would say, actually, when you start to pick away at the financial sector here, we have some really quite interesting options. A lot of the big European and UK banks, for example, are trading below the value of their assets. That is compelling to me.
All right. We'll be talking much more about European stocks just a bit later in the show. Jeremy Schwartz, Sophie Lunier, it's great to have you both here. Thank you very much. All right. We got a lot more to come here on Worldwide Exchange, including the one word that investors have to know today. But first, you've heard of the Magnificent Seven, but what about the Super Seven, the new list of stocks that Citi says could outperform some of the biggest names on Wall Street? Plus, Apple is escalating its fight with Fortnite maker Epic Games as Europe's Digital Markets Act. It goes into effect today. And then later in the show, Foot Locker losing ground over the holiday season and its stock is sinking. We have your big money movers and much more coming up when Worldwide Exchange returns. Stay with us.
What does it mean to be rich? Maybe it's less about reaching a magic number and more about discovering the magic in life. At Edward Jones, our dedicated financial advisors are the people you can count on for financial strategies that help support a life you love. Because the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Learn more about our comprehensive approach to planning at edwardjones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
Go spread the word. When you get a fresh, hot McCrispy from McDonald's and you can feel the heat coming through the bag, don't try to wait till you get home. Always respect hot chicken. The McCrispy, only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
All right. So, of course, you've heard of the Magnificent Seven, the group of high-powered tech stocks dominating the broader markets in terms of market weight and performance. That group collectively up more than 80% over the past year compared to the S&P's 28% gain. Now, Citi's out with its own list of stocks, all European-based. It says share similar characteristics to the Mag 7 and could be set to outperform. Let's bring in Citi Global Equity Strategist Beata Munte in the CNBC debut of the Super 7. Sounds like a superhero team, Beata. Great to have you here. Good morning.
Lovely to be here. Morning.
All right, so we're going to show everybody the list. I'm just going to read them. ASML, LVMH, SAP, Schneider, Richemont, Ferrari, and last but not least, Novo Nordisk, actually hitting a 52-week high on some trial data. So what made you put these list of stocks together? What is the characteristic that makes this the European Super 7 to our U.S. Mag 7?
So what we've noticed this year that there's been an interesting dynamics playing out in the European market. So European market is doing very well, outperforming the US or matching the performance. But actually, it is happening with the narrowing of the returns into these few stocks, right? And that hasn't, we've heard about narrowing in the US last year. It did not happen in Europe. Europe last year was broadened. So that's a new dynamics. There is a catch up of the European market from that perspective. And of course, well, a caveat here is ideally, I would like the broadening of the market. So cyclical markets like Europe tend to thrive in the broadening environment, not narrowing. So this is quite a normal situation that we are having right now. But we think it's due to this catch up of last year. So okay, if the risk is the market narrows further this year, then we search for the characteristics of Mag 7 that we could find in the European market. So we looked for superior growth, we looked for superior margins, and but also for economic modes. And these are the companies that tick off all these boxes.
All right, so that's your Super 7. We're going to continue to show the audience the list. Again, Novo Nordisk hitting a 52-week high on some new trial data. It's hard to not see here that very different from our Mag 7, the Super 7, it has a big concentration in consumer discretionary spending, specifically luxury spending. How should we read that?
So this is what I like about the European Super 7, that it's more diverse from the sector perspective than the Magnificent 7 really crowding into one theme. So you have an AI play, of course, in Europe, in the Super 7.
You're talking about some SAP.
Industrials play.
You mean SAP?
Yes, and ASML as well. And industrial way of playing AI is Schneider, actually. And then, of course, you have three consumer stocks. Two of them are luxury, or you can assume three of them are actually luxury. So so they have the right characteristics for the narrowing. However, if further down the line economic data continues to improve, the central banks start cutting, we argue that it's going to be environment right for the broadening of the equity market. So these cyclical sectors that all these Super 7 stocks are in could do quite well as well.
You know, you just led me to my next question. Here in the U.S., we're obviously looking for our central bank to cut. How important are central bank cuts to these stocks and also just European equities in general?
They are very important for the European equities in general and, of course, for the economy, right? Mm-hmm. So our view is that we are going to have 5 cuts from the ECB this year, 5 from the Fed, and an important point for what is going to happen next over the medium term, not the very near term, is of course the early cycle dynamics. We are already seeing it in Europe. The data, of course, is not great in Europe, but it's improving. So we see more and more evidence that we are at the cyclical trough, or we've already hit it.
All right, Beata Monte with the Super 7, the European answer to the Mag 7. Great to have you here. We'll be continuing to track those stocks. Thanks again. All right, coming
Thank
up
you.
Here on Worldwide Exchange, we're counting down to a major central bank decision today. And if the European Central Bank will follow the Fed's policy playbook of higher for longer. Stay with us. Much more coming up.
From pit lane to podium, the Las Vegas Grand Prix is providing fans a race day experience at the speed they deserve. With the help of T-Mobile for Business, our 5G advanced network solutions are powering race day operations with event-wide connectivity. From streamlined gate entry to an immersive app, giving fans blazing fast access to the sport they love. This is accelerating innovation. This is the Las Vegas Grand Prix with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. This morning we're looking at Apple and its fight against Fortnite maker Epic Games. And It's ticking up just a notch over in Europe. Apple blocking the Fortnite video game maker from launching its own online marketplace on iPhones and iPads in Europe. Now, EU regulators are taking a closer look at what's set to be a very historic day for the tech sector and possibly for consumers all across Europe. Steve Kovac here joining us with the latest on this story. Steve, good morning. Looking at Apple shares down fractionally, what's the latest when it comes to this battle?
Yeah, historic day indeed. So this is the Digital Markets Act, Frank, also known as the DMA, and it's only hours old, and Apple is already testing its limits. This morning, the European Commission, which is responsible for enforcing the law, tells CNBC it's investigating Apple's compliance with the DMA. That includes the fees it still wants to charge and kicking Epic Games out of the App Store again this week. First, let's explain what the DMA is. It affects companies like Apple, Google, Meta, and Amazon, and lots of new rules here, but the most attention is on Apple because it's basically the most profitable of the group and has been the most resistant to regulations like this. The DMA forces Apple for the first time to allow third-party app stores on the iPhone and make it easier for users to choose a default web browser or make payments outside of Apple Pay. Now, Apple weeks ago announced how it plans to comply with the law, which includes new fees for app makers if they want to work on third-party app stores. That angered companies like Spotify and Epic, which want looser rules and lower fees, sort of like the way apps already work on systems like the Mac or Windows computers. Now, regulators in the EU will have their say whether or not Apple is in fact complying with the new law, and if they find Apple or any other company in violation, they could be fined up to 10% of their global revenue. Let's put a big number on that. For Apple, that would be about $40 billion, Frank.
Wow, $40 billion for a fine? That's pretty interesting.
Yes.
So when is there going to be any type of decision or ruling when this all for all of this? And when do we expect it to come down? And then what's the process? Let's say there is a ruling. Can Apple appeal it? I mean, what are the next steps?
This is so novel, Frank. We literally don't know. So Apple put out its idea a few weeks ago, like I said, for compliance with this law. And basically, the European Commission could do nothing because enforcement didn't begin until today. And so we're going to watch how this investigation process plays out. I can refer back to another EU law called the Digital Services Act, which impacts more of the social media companies like X or Facebook and things like that. They're already investigating. They started back in January or even last fall about some content moderation problems, especially around the war between Israel and Hamas. So, but that's been taking months as well. So it really could be some time before this all plays out. And of course, Apple's going to do everything it can to drag its feet on this, Frank.
All right. Well, we know you're going to be following all the latest developments. Our Steve Kovac live at the NASDAQ. Steve, thank you.
Thanks.
All right. Coming up, if the suit doesn't fit, why shares of Hugo Boss, they are heading. Look at this chart. They're heading for their worst day in 8 years. Shares down just about 17%. And if you haven't already, follow our podcast. If you miss Worldwide Exchange, check us out on Apple, Spotify, or other podcast apps. Much more Worldwide Exchange coming up right after this. It is right around 5:30 a.m. in the New York City area, and there's a lot more ahead here on Worldwide Exchange. Here is what's still on deck. Stocks facing pressure once again after Wall Street briefly stops its slide with some modest gains yesterday. Futures right now, they're fighting for gains. New details emerging this morning on President Biden's agenda for his State of the Union address tonight. Top of that list, corporate taxes. We're going to dig into other key areas for the president and what it all means for your money. A New York community bank fighting to stay afloat, announcing a new capital injection and a leadership shakeup as we approach 1 year since the last sizable shock to the regional banking sector. It is Thursday, March the 7th, 2024. You are watching Worldwide Exchange right here on CNBC. All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. I'm Frank Holland. Let's get you ready for the trading day ahead. We pick up the half an hour with a check of U.S. stock futures after the major averages. They snapped a three-session losing streak yesterday. Right now, you can see futures right now solidly in the green across the board. The S&P moved into positive territory firmly. The Dow moving into positive territory as well. But it's really the Nasdaq, the best performer, at least in the pre-market, up just about a quarter of 1%. All right. Yesterday, Fed Chairman Jay Powell on Capitol Hill, he's set to resume his congressional testimony today after telling lawmakers the central bank it just needs just a bit more data before it moves on rates.
It's a very important step. We think because of the strength in the economy and the strength in the labor market and the progress we've made, we can approach that step carefully and thoughtfully and with greater confidence. And when we reach that confidence, the expectation is we will do so sometime this year. We can then begin dialing back the restriction on our policy.
All right. We're also checking treasuries ahead of Jay Powell returning to Capitol Hill later today. Right now, we're seeing the benchmark come in at 4.1%. We'll continue to watch yields throughout the morning. Guess what else we're watching? It's energy, specifically oil, with WTI hovering very close to $80 a barrel. Tensions in the Middle East continue to rise after a Houthi missile attack yesterday killed three aboard a cargo ship in the Gulf of Aden. These are some of the first casualties since the attacks in the Red Sea began back in November. Taking a look at the oil market, we're seeing oil actually move lower this morning, down about 0.75% for both WTI, the U.S. benchmark, and also Brent crude, the international benchmark. And last but certainly not least, we got to hit gold, hitting fresh record highs this morning, moving about 0.25% higher. Gold right now trading at basically $2,160 an ounce. Again, hitting a new high for the week, up just over 5%. Okay, that's your morning money setup. Now we want to turn to a news alert. New details this morning on President Biden's State of the Union address and the key topics that he plans to discuss and focus on during tonight's speech. Megan Casella joins us now with more on what the president is expected to say. Megan, good morning.
Good morning, Frank. So that's right. In his State of the Union speech tonight, President Biden is expected to propose raising the corporate minimum tax to 21%. That'll be up from the 15% level that he signed into law less than 2 years ago. He's also going to call for eliminating corporate tax breaks for all employee salaries over $1 million. So current law already says that companies cannot deduct CEO and other executive salaries, but this would expand that to say no employee salaries above that $1 million threshold could be deducted. He also wants to, he will lay out that proposal, the White House says would raise $250 billion. Now, this will all come as a speech that is overall going to be focused in no small part on the economy. We're also going to hear some familiar proposals like raising the corporate tax rate to 28%. And he's going to be previewing a budget that the White House says would cut $3 trillion over the next decade. And now, Frank, the caveat here is that these are just proposals. He will need Congress's help to get this through, and Republicans are unlikely to get on board. But this does show us where Democrats will be looking to fund their agenda and to cut the deficit moving forward.
All right. That proposal on corporate taxes, that'll certainly get the attention of a lot of investors out there. There's something else that the president has on his mind. It's not corporate taxes. It's actually corporate jets, possibly looking to close a loophole. You have more details on that as well.
He sure does. It's all part of this theme, right, of trying to level the playing field and raise taxes on the wealthy that we're going to hear a lot more about. So that corporate tax proposal, that corporate jet tax proposal, would cut a tax break that gives better treatment to corporate jets versus commercial jets. He also wants to increase the fuel tax on corporate and private jet travel. So we're going to see more of that theme, Frank.
Yeah. You know what? That's one of those things I think for regular people, it's like, wait, you get a loophole for it being in a corporate jet? That'll be interesting. Megan Casella with some of the details looking ahead to President Biden's State of the Union address. Megan, thank you so much. All right, for much more on President Biden's State of the Union address, let's bring in Jimmy Pethakoukas, economic policy analyst at the American Enterprise Institute, as well as a CNBC contributor. Jimmy, good to see you as always.
Frank, how you doing?
All right, so Megan just hit on that, the proposal when it comes to corporate taxes. What else should investors be focused on in this State of the Union address?
Well, certainly I think the corporate tax thing is maybe the big news, and it's a way for him to really draw a contrast with his certainly now almost certain opponent, Donald Trump. These corporate tax provisions would, among other things, you know, basically repeal the business Trump tax cuts, which the former president will run on. Also, I mean, he's going to talk about shrinkflation a little bit. He's going to talk about, you know, get some hint of what other aspects of his agenda, such as funding health care. I mean, I'm not sure people have a very good idea at this point of what the president would do in a second term. And the president will also talk about what he's been done in this term, because certainly the administration feels like the general story of the first Biden term and the infrastructure spending and the clean energy spending really isn't well understood by the American people.
All right. So, you're saying right now taxes on corporations and the wealthy, that's going to be one of the themes. And also it's going to be a broader theme. You're mentioning what the president did during his first term. You say he's going to focus on what you're calling economic populism.
Yeah, he has his kind of, you know, you have Donald Trump with his populism, and his populism, while it's not that different when it comes to things like trade, is going to be different when it comes, you mentioned corporate jets, that's part of it, going after billionaires, That's another part of it. Going after companies, not just on corporate taxes, but also on things like, you know, are they trying to take advantage of inflation by shrinking package sizes? All are different aspects of sort of, you know, Democratic populism as opposed to Donald Trump's sort of right-wing populism.
All right. One other area he's going to focus on is lowering health care costs. I believe that could kind of be under that umbrella of economic populism. But what do you expect him to say specifically when it comes to the State of the Union address tonight when it comes to health care?
That they want the government and Medicare to negotiate across a wide, particularly in drugs, a wide spectrum of drugs, not just 10 or 20, but many, many. So getting down health care costs, because one thing about the Affordable Care Act, it gave people health insurance, but it hasn't really done a lot to rein in health care costs. So he wants to attack that. And listen, let's not forget, this isn't just policy. It's going to be politics. The president needs to seem vigorous.
Yeah, you know, appearances do matter when it comes to speeches like this. There's one other topic I would imagine he'd hit on. I want to get your take. How does he address big tech and also the emergence of artificial intelligence?
Yeah, I'm going to find that really interesting because he put out this executive order over the summer. And that's, you know, slowly going to be implemented, you know, on AI. And I'll see if he says anything more about it. What I would like to see him talk about is sort of the promise, you know, because it could really upend, you know, accelerate economic growth, make the deficit, you know, because he wants to reduce the deficit through some of those corporate tax hikes. Another way to reduce the deficit is grow the economy faster. And I would love for him to talk about something which is going to be a pretty big part of our lives going forward.
Do you expect him to talk about regulation specifically or simply? It sounds like you think he's going to be optimistic and talk about the promise.
I don't know if he's going to be optimistic. I mean, certainly he'll talk about, you know, what has he done in the past that right. People might not know about. AI regulation is part of it. But I would like for him to balance that with like an upbeat message about what it can do for us.
All right. Jimmy Pethakoukas, always great to see you. Biden's State of the Union address coming up later tonight. Thank you very much.
You bet.
All right, we're turning now back to banking. We're turning to the latest developments around New York Community Bank in particular. We're watching shares on what's really been another roller coaster week for this struggling regional lender following yesterday's announcement of a $1 billion capital raise and a leadership shakeup led by former U.S. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin. The developments coming as we approach the one-year anniversary of the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank and the subsequent regional bank reckoning. Our Leslie Picker joins us now with much more on this story. Leslie, good morning. Seeing New York Community Bank shares, they're up almost 3% this morning, but a lot going on with this lender.
Yeah, and it's remarkable, Frank, because we are almost a year to the day that Silicon Valley Bank experienced that historic run leading to its demise. And of course, that failure plus the one of Signature Bank came at a cost to the surviving banking system. And within the last week or so, so it's still going on, that figure was revised upward by a whopping 25%. Last fall, the FDIC levied a $16 billion fee spread out mostly among the biggest banks. That special assessment covered the depletion of the deposit insurance fund after it was used to protect uninsured depositors of SVB and Signature. Well, that figure was just bumped up to $20 billion. The new numbers, of course, are raising questions about whether uninsured depositors should have been required to take haircuts on their deposits and whether deposit insurance reform should be back on the table. And this, of course, as you mentioned, comes amid the surprise $1 billion infusion from a group of private investors into New York Community Bank Corp yesterday. That deal, the terms of which I'm told were finalized as shares were in free fall, seemed to have stabilized the stock for now. You can see shares currently up about 3.2%. Prior to the deal's announcement, though, NYCB's stock was pricing in a high likelihood of failure. The company is actually hosting a conference call in about 2.5 hours to discuss this equity raise and the change of leadership, which comprises a board seat for lead investor and former Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin and a CEO role for Joseph Otting, the former comptroller of the currency. So we'll be tuning in at 8 a.m. and we'll be sure to bring you the highlights, Frank.
Yeah, I'm sure there's going to be a lot to talk about there. So, Leslie, I want to ask you a couple of questions. Yesterday, we heard Fed Chair Jay Powell say the commercial real estate risk is manageable, but he did predict losses of some banks. And then yesterday, we had a regional bank CEO right here on Worldwide Exchange, the CEO of Old National Bank. He said very similar comments. He said deposits are strong, and he believes that, you know, the commercial real estate risk is pretty minimal, and maybe New York Community Bank is more of an isolated, you know, incident. What are you seeing? What are you hearing? I know you have great sources across the banking sector.
Yeah, I think I would say the C-suite of the banking sector would agree with that, that the risks for credit quality remain manageable. Now, the key question, if you talk to people who are focused on risk management, is they're manageable now, given kind of the current state of economy, assuming we go into some sort of soft landing. If things do deteriorate and we get into a hard landing or true bona fide recession, that does tend to have a de minimis effect on credit quality, which could create some challenges for commercial real estate and specifically office. Some areas of multifamily have been struggling as well. So a lot of this really just has to do with the macro environment. There are some unique aspects to office, be it, half full buildings after the pandemic, multifamily. There have been some challenges with rent stabilized apartments due to a recent regulation passed in New York just back in 2019 that's created a challenging dynamic there. But as long as the economy is going fine, I think most people do agree with Jay Powell that it will be manageable for the most part.
All right, our Leslie Picker, you have a busy day ahead of you. The latest on New York Community Bank coming up at 8 o'clock this morning. Thanks again. All right, coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, throwing more cold water on the rate cut hopes, the new comments from another Fed chief on how little the central bank may be easing its policy this year. Plus, a bullish call on one EV maker not named Tesla. That name in your morning call sheet, that's coming up. But first, to check on some of this morning's big money movers, and today it's all about fashion. Victoria's Secret plummeting on a weaker outlook. The retailer is staying conservative in the near term, citing four straight quarters of falling demand. Hugo Boss also warning of slowing sales and earnings growth after both targets missed expectations during the most recent quarter. The German fashion giant says it may not meet its 2025 sales guidance due to weak consumer sentiment. And Foot Locker is lower again after plunging nearly 30% yesterday. The company reporting a holiday quarter loss and delaying a key profitability target. It's been working to turn around the business under former Ulta Beauty boss Mary Dillon. Much more Worldwide Exchange coming up after this. All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. Time now for your morning call sheet. We start with Jefferies initiating coverage of Rivian with a buy rating and a $16 price target. Jefferies saying the EV maker has looked the closest to Tesla, at least in spirit, with its own strong brand identity and global potential. Another coverage initiation, this time from Goldman Sachs on TKO Group, giving the parent company of the UFC and the WWE a buy rating and a $102 price target. Goldman saying TKO is well positioned to achieve high single digit annualized revenue growth. And Stifel upgrading its rating and price target on Micron, moving the chip maker to a buy and 120 per share. Stifel saying the chip maker is seeing leverage return and thinks consensus estimates for next year are just too low. All right, time now for your global briefing. We start with European markets under some pressure ahead of the ECB's latest monetary policy decision coming up at 8:15 a.m. Eastern. It's expected to keep rates at a record 4% for the fourth consecutive meeting. Officials warning it's too early to declare a victory over inflation, though new projections could make the case for cuts later this year. Chinese exports rising by more than 7% in January, offering positive signals for recovery of global demand. The data echoes strength from South Korea, Germany, and Taiwan, whose shipments all topped expectations over the past 2 months. Surging demand for semiconductors helping boost several Asian economies. And the U.S. says that three crew members on a cargo ship, they have been killed in a Houthi missile strike in the Gulf of Aden. Central Command condemning the attack on social media. Oil prices pulling back despite that attack. All right, coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, we have the one word that every investor needs to know today, plus the technical signals. Our next guest says that shows stocks, they may be overbought, and the one area that she says looks a little bit extra frothy. And if you haven't already, follow our podcast. If you miss Worldwide Exchange, check us out on Apple, Spotify, or other podcast apps. Much more Worldwide Exchange coming up after this. All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. We've got a market flash for you. We're watching shares of semiconductor makers. Bloomberg reporting last night that the U.S. government is set to invest $3.5 billion in Intel so it can produce advanced semiconductors for military and intelligence programs. Taking a look at shares of a number of semiconductor companies, Intel up 1.5%, not shown right here, but also Taiwan Semi up nearly 3%, ARM just about up 2%. All right. Turning now to your WEX wrap-up. We're going to start with the Financial Times reporting. J.P. Morgan spent a year discussing a potential deal with Discover Financial before Capital One announced its $1 billion acquisition of the company. The FT says JPM began exploring a deal in 2021, but abandoned those efforts a year later. The European Commission telling CNBC this morning it's seeking further explanations from Apple on why it prevented Epic Games from launching its own online marketplace on iPhones and iPads in that region, and whether it violates new technology rules there. Minneapolis Fed President Neel Kashkari scaling back his rate cut expectations, saying there can only be one cut this year. He previously forecasted two cuts in 2024. Shares of Novo Nordisk, they're popping after the company revealed early trial data for a highly anticipated experimental drug. It showed that participants had weight loss of just over 13% after 3 months. And just hours after federal regulators called out Boeing for failing to fully cooperate in their investigation into that January door plug blowout, Boeing is now responding, providing the NTSB with the names of employees on its 737 MAX door team. Also, ExxonMobil putting Chevron's $53 billion deal for Hess at risk, filing a contract arbitration claim yesterday suggesting it may counter Chevron's offer for Hess's Guyanese oil properties, ones which Exxon currently operates. All right, here's what to watch today. Initial jobless claims and the January U.S. trade deficit both due out at 8:30 a.m. Eastern time. We also get earnings from American Eagle Outfitters, Broadcom, Costco, Gap, and DocuSign. Fed Chairman Jay Powell resumes his two-day testimony on Capitol Hill, this time before the Senate Banking Committee. And we got a pair of Fed speeches this morning from Fed Governor Michelle Bowman and Cleveland Fed President Loretta Mester. Following that, be sure to catch Mester on CNBC exclusively at 1:20 p.m. later today. All right, Fed comments from Powell and company likely to be a key focus for investors today. Taking a look at futures, as we mentioned just a bit earlier, show they're solidly in the green now. All three indices in the green. Looks like the Dow would open up about 30 points higher. The Nasdaq really pushing higher out of all three. Joining me now on the CNBC Newsline, we have Bryn Talkington, managing partner at Requisite Capital Management. She's also a CNBC contributor. Bryn, good morning. Always great to have you here.
Good morning. So glad to be here, Frank.
All right. So tell me, what did you think about what Jay Powell had to say yesterday? What do you think about the market's reaction, at least in the pre-market? We've seen futures go from mixed to solidly higher.
I think the few good comments that Chairman Powell was actually able to get from some of the silly questions the Congress people were asking is that, you know, Chairman Powell clearly said, we don't have to be at 2%. Before we cut rates, we just need to be in that glide path. That wasn't his exact words. And so I think that gave a lot of confidence to the market that we're not going to have to wait till 2%. But if we continue to have this type of data, we're going to get rate cuts. Because what you don't want to do is the Fed, which historically is late to cut rates because they wait till something happens. You want to get rate cuts earlier before you have, for example, another New York NYCB bank, you know, happening in the market.
Okay. It sounds like that you believe that since the rate cuts are coming, that's given the market confidence, and that we've heard a lot of people on CNBC say all that matters is that the cuts are coming. The timing of the cuts, is that meaningful to you at all?
I think when we look back in 2025, looking at 2024, you won't remember when the rate cuts were, but I think right now in the moment, they definitely matter. If all of a sudden rate cuts, because we get, let's say, more inflationary numbers, don't come until more the back half of the year, then I think that will cause more volatility in the market in that time period. I don't think they're going to cut rates right before the election, so I think we're going to get them in the summer and then possibly right after the election, because I believe they meet on November 4th.
All right. So you're also looking at some of the technicals when it comes to the market. According to your data, about 80% of S&P 500 names are above their 200-day moving average. The index itself well above the 200-day moving average as well. What does that mean to you?
So we've been getting these one-day scares this year where we get the market sell-off for one day like we did earlier this week. But so historically, when you have 80% of S&P stocks are above their 200-day moving average, that tells you that's not historically a great entry point, because typically it's telling you the market is very overbought. So I think what typically happens is you work that down where you get more into the 40 or 50%. But like we're seeing today, the market's looking past that, and we seem to have liftoff in the market because I think of, to your point early on, Intel, more government spending, stimulus for semiconductors, as well as I think Jay Powell's dovish comments yesterday.
All right, so you're also making some plays right now. You're investing in AI, but it's not one of those Mag 7 names. You're investing in Palantir that saw a big pop yesterday on getting a new Army contract.
Right. So Palantir, if you go back and listen to their earnings report that came out in February, really what's exciting about the name is the government contracts we've known about, that is where they dominate. It's really the growth in commercial. And so their growth in commercial in Q4, their revenues were up 34%. And they've been doing these AI boot camps where companies can come in, spend 10 or 12 hours with them, and they will go and look at their information, and then they're able to convert that into, they're able to monetize those, where companies are coming in spending $1, $2, and $3 million to start working with Palantir. And this is just, when you listen to Alex Karp, Alex is like, we have to change the company. We have to rebuild the company because of this commercial lift. And so I think it's early days, and I think Palantir is going to end up being, it's already a very important military software company, but a very, very important corporate software company for investors.
All right, Bryn Talkington's pick, Palantir. You can see shares are up over 200% over the last year. Bryn, thank you very much. That's going to do it for us. We got Squawk Box coming up next. Thanks for watching. You've been listening to CNBC's Worldwide Exchange. You can always catch us live weekdays at 5 a.m. Eastern.
From a flat tire in the city to a dead battery on a distant drive, AAA is partnering with T-Mobile for Business to accelerate response times and get more drivers back on the road fast. Our nationwide connectivity powers location telematics, so AAA's fleet can find stranded drivers quickly while being fully equipped with the in-vehicle tools to have answers when they get there. This is elevating the member experience. This is AAA with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.